Hello and welcome to Literary Loitering, the Geek Show's dedicated arts and books and culture podcast. We are part of the Geek Show podcast network. I'm Graham, and this week I've been joined by Andrew.
Hello.
Sarah.
Hello.
And Rob eating a salad.
Damn it, you caught me off guard.
I mean, when I've already introduced Andrew and Sarah, there's really only so many places the introduction can go.
Okay, well, take two.
And Rob.
Good salad.
Yes, we bring you all latest news from the world of arts and culture, and we like to start off with, I mean, I say Game of Thrones news.
Andrew.
It's gaining a more kazoo flavour as it goes on.
Oh, that's an instrument I could play.
Just wait.
Yes.
Just wait until Andrew hits full vuvuzela.
Actually, I'm going to say that this bit will not be making return because that hurt my nose.
I was actually worried that you were basically going to collapse.
I can just picture him with his cheeks swelled up like Dizzy Gillespie.
Or a guinea pig.
It's not my fault. It's been so long since Game of Thrones. Watch, I panicked.
Well,
I got too excited and burned myself out.
This is sort of the thing, isn't it? Game of Thrones news very rarely involves any actual news about Game of Thrones.
It's mainly the White House. It's mainly the American politics. No.
Yeah, yes. And this week is no exception, as TV showrunners David Weiss and David Benioff have talked about what they know about the end of George R. R. Martin's book series. And the answer, regular listeners will be astonished to hear, it's nothing. Not much, really.
Yeah, isn't it one of those situations where the books have diverged completely from the TV show now?
Well, they've had to, yeah. It's sort of one of those situations, like with The Handmaid's Tale, they dramatised the whole of Margaret Atwood's novel in season one, and then we're like, what do we do next?
I know, let's have a sequel.
Which is happening. Atwood's writing it.
She's writing a sequel?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, Handmaid's Tale 2, The Rise of Mecha Offred.
Oh, no. It will be Handmaid's Tale 2, The Return of Angel Catbird.
Which... Handmaid's Tale 2, handmade for your pleasure.
Hey.
You know Angel Catbird is actually one of her creations, don't you?
I didn't until he said that. I was just assuming you'd had a stroke.
Nope. I think we covered it on 4Panel, didn't we, Andrew?
We did. It wasn't good. Unlike that handmade for your pleasure joke, which was good and also very bad, Graham. You should be ashamed. Like, go hide in the corner. Think about what you've done.
I was trying to distract us from that.
So yes, Weiss and Benioff have been asked about it, and they've said, we've talked to George, and one thing we've talked about is that we're not going to tell people what the differences are, so when those books come out, people can experience them fresh.
And when those books come out?
There's then a magnificent moment of a man recognising his own pun, as Benioff says, I don't think the final book is written in stone yet, then pauses and says, it's not written on paper yet.
See, Wise and Benioff, they just sound like a comedy duo or like stage magicians in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
That's what they're doing next.
Like before it was Malcolm and Wise, it was Ernie Wise with Jack Benny. Some sort of random crossover.
And then, you know, they had to sling Benny's hook, so he did the few gigs as Benny off in a fifth peak. Yeah, this all fits now.
Neither would tip out for anything.
So yeah, the final season of Game of Thrones is coming on, and it may or may not have anything to do with the books, which may or may not be written.
I had an interesting time at work today. One of the lads at work has not seen Game of Thrones. He's waited until all of it is finished so he can just marathon the entire lot.
Interesting plan.
Oh, it was so much fun watching him trying to avoid spoilers from all of the other people at work who've watched Game of Thrones.
See, that's why I'm a Twin Peaks fan. Someone could spoil you for an episode of Twin Peaks and it wouldn't matter because it wouldn't make any sense as a sentence anyway.
Mm.
So yeah, that's one of the things that we always do at this point of the show. Another thing we like to start off with is a bit of literary awards news. This one is a prize I hadn't heard of before, probably because the more I dig into the story, the more I come to the conclusion that they do not understand the concept of a literary award.
Well, I'm excited.
Yes. It's the Republic of Consciousness Prize, a title which I have neither made up nor ran through Google Translate a couple of times.
I didn't know consciousness was a
federated state, yeah.
Or a democracy or anything like that.
Yes.
Wow.
Well, I'd assumed it wasn't a democratic nation because they are always saying logic dictates.
Boo!
The public are so fickle. But yes, this year, the Republic of Consciousness Prize, which celebrates the best work by small publishers and therefore should be celebrated rather than gone over with a snarky story like this. But, you know,
Can I just ask one little tiny, tiny question?
Go on, yeah.
Okay. Why consciousness?
I don't know.
Why? It doesn't make sense.
I mean, I think that we are not philosophically capable of handling a question like, why consciousness?
I don't think they are either.
So basically the only part of that entity that we understand is of prize, then?
Yes, essentially. Oh.
Okay.
I know the difference between consciousness and unconsciousness, for example.
Yeah. I mean, I've got to admit, if you're confused by the story now, it's not going to get any easier. Because this year, the winner of the Republic of Consciousness Prize was Murmur by Will Eaves and Lucia by Alex Phoebe. They defended their decision to have two winners by saying the idea of a best book is a false hierarchy.
Then why have a prize in the first place?
Mm. Yeah, that was kind of my thinking, I've got to admit.
That is weird.
I can't wait till next year when the prize winner is every book. Every book ever written.
I can't wait until next year, until the Republic of Consciousness field an Olympic team. That'll be exciting.
Oh, God, can you imagine the flag?
No, I don't think anybody can.
Because we've got false consciousness. The Marxists were right.
I don't know. They'll just be waving a pole about the flag is in your mind.
They don't believe in the hierarchy of sporting events, so it's not like they're going to compete.
I think they'll just stand on the sidelines and just be really supportive.
Yeah, they sound good, actually.
Good.
The 100 metres sprint, they would object. They'd just stand at the start line.
Like I did at school sports day. I like this. We should start this as a micronation, like Sealand or something.
Can we field our own prize, the Republic of Unconsciousness?
The book that best symbolises the experience of being blackout drunk.
Or the book that puts you to sleep.
Both the books sound really good, actually. Murmur is about the life of a mathematician loosely inspired by Alan Turing, and Lucia is based on the life of James Joyce's daughter. And David Collard, one of the judges, has the most incredible description of Lucia. It says, She spent most of her life locked away in grim institutions, but Phoebe is a magician and, quite literally and breathtakingly, ushers Lucia's restless spirit into a serene afterlife through the careful application of Egyptian funerary rituals.
Wow, that is niche.
A lot of these sentences are ending in places where I didn't expect when they started.
Yeah, you're sure you haven't just, like, fed a Twin Peaks script into, like, a Twitter bot, and this is the result?
Oh, we should do that sometime. Feed the Twin Peaks script bot to a Twitter bot.
Definitely.
Yeah, they did 1984 before, didn't they? We were chatting about that one.
We were, yes. Apparently you just feed it the first sense of 1984 and it goes rambling on about driving to your work in Seattle or possibly China. It couldn't decide.
That's right.
The machines are rubbish.
And David Lynch's secret is safe for now.
We've unexpectedly got a bit more James Joyce news.
Right.
Because America is...
What's he done now?
Crazy Joyce.
Has he written a sequel to Ulysses?
Sorry?
Has he written a sequel to Ulysses? Ulysses in space.
Yes. What was that cartoon called?
Ulysses 31.
31, that's it. I wanted to say it and I couldn't get the number straight in my head. But yeah, I was going to say Ulysses 2021, but that's C-Lab, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. Yes, it is.
Coincidentally.
Not to be confused with Ulysses 34, which is unique.
Yeah, Ulysses 34 is, if you can imagine it, James Joyce has written tortured prose about an Irish person masturbating over it.
That's the one.
But yes, 2021, by an extraordinary coincidence, is the number of potential candidates the Democrats are fielding next year. And one of them has a name that I can't pronounce. Sarah, you're normally very up on American politics. Mayor Pete.
Right, okay. Would you repeat that?
Mayor Pete. He's got a surname that I just cannot get away with.
How are you spelling Mayor Pete?
I mean, literally, he's the mayor of somewhere. His name is
Pete.
The mayor.
Oh,
yeah.
I beg your pardon, sorry.
Is it mayor or is it mayor?
Well, this controversy.
Oh, Butty Gag. Oh, Butty.
Oh, Butty Judge. Butty Judge, isn't it?
Wow. There's so many permutations of it. Butty Gig.
Beauty Judge. That's it. Beauty Judge.
This is definitely some kind of like hyacinth bouquet.
It is. I mean, his name quite literally just says butt gag.
Yeah. One of my go-to curses whenever I'm really angry with someone is they deserve to spend their life with a bum full of ghosts. And of course, in German...
Yeah, not dissimilar, actually.
Yeah.
Buttergeist. I'm assuming German for bum is butt. I don't know whether that's true at all.
I'm sure it is. I can't imagine them having a long and complicated word for a simple concept.
Then again, it might be a dairy ghost.
Oh, yes, maybe. Yeah. That was a story of...
No, that wasn't.
Back in the mists of time.
Well, in a lot of ways, Andrew is right. This is a very thin story. Mayor Bum Ghosts has been asked what his favourite book is, and he has said Ulysses. And this has inspired, I think, more analysis than anyone saying my favourite book is a very famous book ever should. Jeet here has accused him of performative intellectualism.
Sorry, what?
Of essentially sort of pretending to be smart.
Clever to show off.
ironically, he has termed that simple concept in a way that is itself performative intellectualism.
That's why I was thrown by it.
Adam Serwer, a staff writer at The Atlantic, to which my commiserations, I guess someone has to do it, said, Ulysses is an important book to read if you want to be well-versed in the Western canon. No one is reading Ulysses for fun. He tweeted that, then deleted it.
It's a trek.
Yeah.
Quite literally.
Anyway, do we want to get to the most important part of this now?
Oh.
You know it.
The correct German for bum ghost is either Hinterngeist or Arschgeist.
Arschgeist.
Yes!
I've also got Gammlergeist or Unterseitergeist.
See, Gammler is in fact a bum in the sense of a deadbeat or layabout. Like, you no good, lousy, stinking gamblers.
Hinton, yeah, you're quite right. Schnorrer. I like Schnorrer. That's also a bum, as in Scrounger, Cadger.
Who the hell knew that Andrew was so good at working out English to German homophones?
Yeah, it's almost like there's some kind of website application into which you can just type a word.
It's almost like that, but as we all know, it doesn't work. So yeah, everyone's sort of tearing apart Pete Buttigieg's choice of Ulysses' favourite book, and some of us are just sort of quietly grateful that there's a presidential candidate who reads, really.
Do we think it's because Ulysses is this guy's a politician, and Ulysses has got a lot of words, but what does it really mean? Does it really say anything? It's kind of all mixed up and hard to understand.
That's a possible line of attack that makes more sense than anything anyone's said about it so far.
I mean, if his favourite book was something like Slaughterhouse-Five or something a bit more mainstreamish.
I can understand him now just reading this book. God, this book goes on for so long without making any kind of point.
When you say it's his favourite book, I'm imagining a scenario where he's been reading it, like he's still on his first reading, even now. It's just taken him this long.
You think that's good? It shows it's good value for money, which means that he'll be a good steward of the American economy.
Yeah, thrifty.
I should be on his team, shouldn't I?
You've got the spin down pat.
I mean, if I was American, I would have to vote for him because he did put out a Twitter video recently of him playing a song by Spoon on the piano, and I don't feel like any politician's really pandered to the Spoon listeners' vote before.
Oh no, is he giving you those hot thoughts?
Yes! How good is that? Listeners, this is how excited I am when someone demonstrates familiarity with Spoon.
I'm genuinely delighted.
See, if his favourite book is Ulysses, does that mean his favourite film is Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Maybe. Even more reason to vote for him, right?
Yeah.
British politicians don't do this, do they? I think it's like, the last time I can remember it happening was when Gordon Brown pretended to be an Arctic Monkeys fan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that it really didn't work, did it?
Didn't work so well.
Don't forget David Cameron and his beloved Arsenal and or West Ham.
I'm down with the kids. I'm down with the common man. I support two teams. That's how down with a common man I am.
That's how much he loves football. He couldn't just confine himself to one team.
He just had all that love overflowing onto another team. But no. I'm glad we just accept now that our politicians are like privileged, awkward robot people.
Ed Miliband must be kicking himself that he didn't make the cut for that realisation.
I'm just imagining David Cameron actually at a football match. Kick that football. Kick it. Kick it, I say.
He'd be just stood there wondering why they don't just get their butlers to do it. I mean, they're rich enough.
I think he has a lot in common with Miliband. Just the poorly thought out interactions with pork.
No, please don't mention politics and pigs. It brings back memories of that statue. You never saw the statue. You don't want to see the statue. You remember the statue, Andrew.
I remember the statue. Pigs in places there shouldn't have been pigs. And more importantly, Margaret Thatcher's in places there shouldn't have been Margaret Thatcher's.
Do not Google it.
I think you'd struggle to Google it from that description. But yes, I mean, I kind of sympathise with this because my favourite book is The Man Without Qualities, as I have mentioned on here before, and that's very long and very pretentious, but I do love it. In fact, the context in which I have mentioned The Man Without Qualities before, this is a pro link, guys. Listen to this and see how the, see how the master does it. Is the gag in it about the military man who goes to a library and finds there are too many books and suggests to the librarian that they should write one book with all of the best ideas from the other books in. And it turns out someone did that once.
Wow.
In about 500 years ago. And if it sounds like we might struggle to make as many bum jokes about this as we did about the last story, fear not, the man's name was Hernando Colon.
Nice.
Thank you, universe.
So yeah, this book called the Libro de los Epitomes manuscript has been found in Copenhagen, where it has not been read for more than 350 years. It details summaries from Hernando Colon's library, over 2,000 pages, including several books that do not exist anymore.
Oh.
Of the ones that do exist, he has really been quite admirably thorough in it, including distilling the complete works of Plato into 30 pages.
Wow. That's concise.
Yeah.
Such a philosophy in it.
Had this idea, right, about a cave. Details later.
So this is Christopher Columbus's son?
Is it?
Ferdinand Columbus? When... Hernando Colon?
Maybe. Oh, yeah. Sorry, I missed that bit, which is quite big. The illegitimate son of Christopher Columbus.
Wow.
That's also, yeah. That's,
wow.
That's a big detail that's been passed through and pumped back out.
Do you think this is also a hyacinth bouquet thing? That, you know, when Columbus got to the New World, he was like, no, no, I know it's spelled colon, but it's pronounced.
Columbus.
And there was no one around who he grew up with to correct him. So, you know.
Christopher Colon just doesn't work.
I guess that explains why they didn't name America after its discoverer, though.
What, Colonica?
We must settle and irrigate the fields of Colonica.
Many shall be our exports.
We must fertilise this land.
Colonica, it's the G20 summit. You need to stop making so much gas.
So what the next story is this page has become unresponsive. Do you want to kill or wait? And I've got to admit, the longer it goes on, kill is looking like a good option.
Can I help you look for it?
No, it's okay. It's loading up now. It's, yes, the American Library Association has released its list, which I know we're all big fans of the most banned or challenged books.
Ooh. Hooray!
Oh, excellent!
And this one, it has to be said, includes quite a lot of... Oh, this page has become unresponsive too.
it contains quite a lot of that, does it?
That's how banned these books are, even the webpage.
Yeah, it includes some old favourites, like Sherman Alexie as the part-time Indian, the one with the title so long that I can't remember it, and The Hate You Give is on there. But there's a shock new entry at number two for John Oliver, Britain's own John Oliver.
Really?
Wow.
Oh, hang on. Is this what I think it is?
It might well
be. Is this the kids' picture book?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
The kids' picture book about Mike Pence's pet rabbit Marlon Bundle turning out to be gay.
Yes.
Has gone straight in at number two.
See, I watched that episode of Last Week Tonight when they actually announced that they'd done this book.
Oh, wow.
It was amazing.
Who'd have thought it would end up at these dizzy heights?
I mean, John Oliver's done really well for himself, considering where he started off, you know, just...
Yeah, that's remarkable, Birmingham. Isn't it?
Yeah, Birmingham, being on the stand-up circuit and then going on to Mock the Week a couple of times and then being on The Daily Show after that.
Yeah.
And now he's got his own show and he's managing to pull off various stunts like buying Russell Crowe's codpiece from... the movie Gladiator, and shipping it off to the only surviving blockbuster left, which is in Alaska. To which Russell Crowe actually used the money from the auction that was part of and opened a koala chlamydia sanctuary in Australia and called it the John Oliver Koala Chlamydia
War. Wow. God. I hope in like a few years' time it turns out all these seemingly weird random things that John Oliver's done has actually been some kind of like secret world domination master plan.
Seems to be going very well for him.
Yes. Amongst other books there, I've got to say, I say this every time we do this list, and I'm going to keep on saying it until the message sinks in among the wider world, but for all those stories you hear about how snowflake students are restricting free speech and banning everything they disagree with, doesn't seem to be many books banned here for problematic content here, I've got to admit. I'm looking for books that have been banned because of transphobia or having the wrong opinion on Black Lives Matter. Nope, not seeing it. Still the same bunch of fossilized bigots trying to ban books.
Wait, are you trying to say that all the people who are constantly on Twitter saying that it's a violation of my right to free speech, that I'm not allowed to be a bigot anymore, they might actually be the ones who are overly sensitive to change?
Can I ask?
You just rocked their world.
Yeah, are most of these people who wanted these books banned or challenged them, are most of them, by any chance, Rosie O'Donnell-style mothers?
As a mother.
Maybe. Or I think there's probably a few Jordan Peterson-style dads in there as well.
Oh, God, that's the worst.
What? I think they prefer the term free thinkers, Graham.
Isn't that just
I couldn't say that with a straight face.
I'm sorry, but if I had a mum like Rosie O'Donnell and a dad like Jordan Peterson, I would disown them. Do you remember that movie?
Get crazy kids together.
I think you would disown them, but only because you were scared of the erect masculine dominance principle I respect.
Oh no, who let Jordan back in on the podcast?
Feel my machismo!
Do you guys remember a movie from years ago called North about a kid who divorced his parents?
I remember Roger Ebert's review of it.
Yeah, it wasn't a very good movie.
Oh, Graham, you're back. You'll never believe it, Graham, but once again, as soon as you'd left, Jordan Peterson appeared on the podcast.
That should be good for our Patreon. But yes, among the books that have also been challenged are Gayle Pittman and Christina Litton's This Day in June and David Leviathan. What a name that
That's is. A name and a half.
He wrote a book which I have to say from its title sounds like it's trying to get on this list, and I support it. David Leviathan's Two Boys Kissing. Just go for it, man. Just, you know.
Fair play.
Yeah, that's...
I mentioned...
You may as well do what you said.
And that's controversial.
It's a Ronseal book.
Well, yeah, absolutely it is.
If only I had been warned before I picked up Two Boys Kissing.
Exactly.
And it's 6 years old now anyway.
Is it?
Yeah, 2013 apparently.
Huh. I mentioned these two books in particular as a pivot to the next story because both of those were among books that were burned in Orange City, Iowa last October by the director of a pro-family group called, and this is almost as great a name as David Leviathan, Rescue the Perishing.
Right.
Wow.
Hang on. Rescue the... If they're perishing, then... Okay, yeah, I kind of figured... Yeah, no, go on. I'm still working it out.
I do agree with what you're saying. If they're perishing, you're past the point of rescue.
At what point, etc.
But David Leviathan versus Rescue the Perishing, that's the Godzilla versus Mothra for our time.
So you're going to throw the Rescue the Perishing clan in the sea then? Perishing is so, like, biblical.
I just associate it with the perishers, the old newspaper cartoon strip.
Yeah.
Probably not what they were going for.
Probably not.
But yes, anyway, unfortunately, we are staying on book burnings. And a priest in Poland...
Oh, I know this story. Do you know why I know this story? Because we had this... We had this on the Geek Show as well, and it's the umbrella that got me, but I'll let you finish.
Priest, Poland...
No, no, umbrella. Don't Google it.
Hey, I've got a fun idea. What if we all Google it, read the story ourselves, and then just quietly contemplate on it?
Great, what if we all read it out together and see
if we harmonise? Yes, I've heard this story, yes.
I've got to admit, the umbrella is not in this version of the story, so there's something that's going to surprise even me.
Okay, cool. I got this, don't worry. I'm there with the umbrella.
But Father Rafał Jarosiewicz, probably not how you pronounce it, but I don't care, held a mass bonfire of objects that he believed were connected to magic and the occult, including Buddhist icons, an African wooden mask, figurines of elephants. The hell have you got against elephants?
What?
I mean, and... someone's read The Elephants of Poznance.
Yeah. I don't remember that from Macbeth's witches scene with the cat called Grey Malkin and a giant elephant, which is also a witch's familiar, apparently, now.
See, I was going to say, I haven't seen that version of Pirates of Penzance.
Julie Taymor's Pirates of Penzance. and several Harry Potter novels, so it wasn't all things Andrew would disapprove of.
Oh no, there was Twilight in there and copies of the Chronicles of Narnia as well.
But the umbrella.
Yes, the umbrella.
It's a Hello Kitty umbrella.
Yep, it was a Hello Kitty umbrella, which is why there's this, the episode of The Geek Show that just went out has a picture of, you know, the Satan pentagram with a Hello Kitty bow on it.
Okay.
I see. Cunning.
So first of all, Elephants of Poznan. Not Poznance. that that's pirates. I made a mistake. I'd say they burned a satanic Hello Kitty umbrella.
Yes. I mean, excellent. Rob's first question when I told him about it was, what did Hello Kitty do?
I mean, clearly made her multi-billion dollar empire all for the praise of Baphomet.
Yeah. I'm looking at the photo that comes with this, and we've got one priest and we've got two kids dressed as Batman, and there's a little fire grate with some tiny objects in it, and I think maybe, correct me if I'm wrong here, this news item might have been blown up out of all proportion by the media.
Maybe a bit. I'm looking at the people standing around in the background, and it's not entirely clear if they're connected to it or just gawping.
Well, no, they're the ones who are making sure that the kids are okay near a priest.
Oh. Ooh. Low blow. But there's one. Very good. Thing is, just to add to this, right, just to add to this, that priest, the Catholic priest, is part of an evangelical group in northern Poland. Do you know what they're called? The SMS from Heaven Foundation.
Oh, wow. That's really modern.
And the
that's a Toby Keith song. Shut up. The
thing is, they actually posted pictures of all of this on Facebook, but then deleted them afterwards after they came under a massive backlash.
Ah, the Andrew Serwer tweeting method. I'm just impressed that the priest officiating this has like a robe with a pink scarf on. Very inclusive.
That's nice. Appreciate that.
Just, man, he's going to be so embarrassed though if like he checks his phone and like, first of all, there's a message from the big G saying, you know what? What if we burned all the books? LOL. And then he looks back and there's another one that's just disregard drunk text.
or you know, the big J turns up sporting a Hello Kitty t-shirt.
I think maybe they aren't so, I wouldn't have thought they'd be so harsh on the colour pink, because there's another guy, another priest, it might be the same one, he's also got like a pink gown to go with it, so oh, I mean, really? That's hella coordinated.
Either he got his washing wrong.
That could be, yeah.
I mean, hey, just because you're a bigot doesn't mean you don't like to accessorise with a bit of style.
Should we move on to other breathtakingly thick bigots?
Oh, yes, please.
Is this a Boris Johnson story?
Bret Easton Ellis.
Oh,
has an interview in the New Yorker, and it's an interview conducted by Isaac Chatonnet, and I want to mention him at the start because he is now a literary loitering hero. He had the miserable detail of reading Bret Easton Ellis's collection of essays on culture and politics, which is called White Edgy.
Wow. Provocative.
And he started off by asking why he finds liberals who oppose Trump more annoying than Trump supporters. And he waffles on in circles for about half an hour. Eventually, Ellis makes the mistake of actually citing facts. And he says, about Trump's approval rating, let's say it is overall way up from 38% to 50% or even higher. And let's say Latinos are now 50% approval for Trump, to which Shorty fires back, that's not true, but okay. Ellis replies, okay, but whatever. That is the entirety of the answer.
Yep. That's the Bret Easton Ellis we know, and
it's the kind of brilliant intellectual fact from someone who I've never seen in a photo with his mouth closed. eventually, I think Shorty gets on to some of the real reasons why Ellis has written this book. Ellis says, I just think that there is a man that got elected president. This on itself is true, by the way. There is a man who got elected president. But he continues, he is in the White House. He has vast support from his base. He was elected fairly and legally.
Oh, Brett, you started so well. You had to reach that little bit further, didn't you? Like Icarus, you flew too close to the sun.
Like Icarus, I have been dining out on my first book since 1986. And I think what happened is that the left is so hurt by this that they have overreacted to the presidency. Now, look, I live with a democratic, socialist, bordering on communist millennial. I hear it every day. As this interview goes on, there is more and more about Bret Easton Ellis's poor goddamn boyfriend. And after a while, he says, they might very well vote him out. I hope we do, so we have some sense of normalcy in this household. To which Shortier replies, big picture.
Oh, meow.
It just continues like a knifing. I do recommend, listeners, that you read the whole thing, but two more bits to close out on. He raises Ellis's opinions on Me Too, which, surprise, are garbage. But he reads out a quote from an interview with Ellis in the Times Literary Supplement. And after he finishes the quote, Ellis says, agreed, agreed. To which Chautier replies, well, you've said it, of course you agree. after a while, he just beats down Ellis to the point where...
are we talking like metaphorically or physically? Because I would prefer the latter.
It could be both. Ellis says, I think I am an absurdist. I think politics are ridiculous. To which Chautier responds, maybe don't write a book about it. Would that be the solution? Ellis replies, I think the problem is that I don't necessarily see this as being as interesting as fiction. To which Chautier, who once again has read Ellis's book, says, yes, I could tell.
Wow.
And then he just stood up, grabbed the steel chair, and went for the TKO.
It's quite rare to read an interview where you imagine the interviewer washing the subject's blood off his shirt afterwards.
See, I am an advocate for basically being aggressive in an interview, especially with certain types of people. I think when you interview politicians, you should be aggressive. You should be asking them the hard questions because at the end of the day, they're politicians. They decided to do that job, you know?
That's one of the things that baffles me about living in this kind of period of transition from old media to new media is that everyone talks about new media as if it's punk and disruptive by nature. But when you watch an interview on Newsnight, it's usually pretty combative.
Yeah.
And when you watch like Dave Rubin on YouTube, it's like, oh, well, I heard the left calling you a racist, but here you are sat in front of me in your grand wizard outfit, and I've got to say, you haven't said anything controversial at all.
In his grand wizard outfit.
In his grand wizard outfit. He could just be a member of the ERG, as we know.
Either that, or he's just admiring the fashion sense.
he's a priest who got his head stuck inside a very pointy pillowcase.
I mean, can you imagine if it was clad outfits by Versace or something like that?
Nazi
outfits
Boss.
By Hugo Boss.
Yes.
I mean, to be fair, not necessarily to defend new media, but I feel like this is an inherent problem of trying to have like your serious political discussion show on a site where if someone complains about it, they can get your entire channel shut down.
Yes, this is also very true.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe Bret Easton Ellis should have his own YouTube show. I mean, he's got some scintillating thoughts.
Don't give him ideas, Graham. Don't give him ideas.
Hey, anything that takes up more of his time so he can't write any more books.
Oh, are we doing the Kevin Smith thing then?
You know who Bret Easton Ellis should take some real inspiration from? George R. R. Martin.
Yes.
That man knows how to not write books.
Oh. But yeah, I mean, I almost don't want to talk about Bret Easton Ellis because he hasn't been even remotely relevant since the early 90s. But I just thought that interview was such a beautiful shipping that I couldn't resist it.
It does sound great, but I also have the ultimate Christmas toy for an unruly child.
Oh?
The Gur Martin Activity Centre.
It's just a box of knives.
And various other shiny objects.
Oh dear. I'm watching some people across the road from me start a bonfire, and I'm wondering if this is like a copycat effect.
Maybe. Can you see any Hello Kitty items?
But yes, that about wraps it up for this week, I think.
Yeah. Oh, unless someone has a surprise news story at the end.
I mean, I did have another news story, which was a list of advice that I'd got for reading more books, which I thought was mostly silly and bad. But once you've had that Bret Easton Ellis interview... God.
I don't know. I feel like I've still got a little tiny sliver of room left for dessert.
Okay, then.
Go on.
I'll fetch it back. Yeah. So this is how I read 100 books in a year from the Harvard Business Review. So these are serious people writing this, Driv. And they have given us, let me just see how many there are, 8 points of advice on how to read more books.
Okay, I'm on the edge of my seat, quite literally.
I am shuddering with anticipation.
You're on the edge of your seat because you've put the salad down and it's too far away.
My chair has wheels.
So the first one, kick it off with something nice and practical, I think. Live inside a world of books.
Oh, good. Yep. I've seen that anime. I just need to work out the right spell.
All I can say is, number one, immediate fire hazard.
Particularly if you're a Polish priest, right?
Yeah, exactly. Number two, yeah, no. I assume a house of books is the equivalent of a world of books, because a world of books would be, well,
it's know, impractical.
It's impractical. Book mountain, book trees, book rivers, you know, book lions, book birds.
Wallpapering your house and all the windows, and also building yourself some kind of skin suit made out of book pages, is far more practical.
It sounds good, actually. Yeah. I'm picturing you like the two Maries at the end of Daisies when they've made those uniforms out of newspapers.
Yes. Very practical and absorbent.
You know, there was a TV show about people who hoard lots of things, especially newspapers, for some bizarre reason. If you had a house full of books, you'd just look like that.
Yeah. I mean, I already do.
So anyway... What you're saying is, step one in how to read a lot of books is have a lot of books.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thanks.
Great. Make sure books are available. Thank God they pointed that out to me.
It's a bit more than that, though. They also suggest that you leave the books around where they can be easily picked up, which is a great point. Too often I have encased my books in a block of cement.
Yes, mine are all in a safe.
Well,
and sometimes I forget the combination.
I kind of understand what they mean. A lot of people probably don't have this modern invention. It's only recently been released. It's called a bookshelf or a bookcase.
It's at the forefront of technology. I mean, not everybody is there.
It is. It is. And what they do, they just pile their books up in columns to support the roof.
I mean, it's a living nightmare. I mean, all the exams you have to pass just to access a library.
I mean, can you imagine?
He comes out specifically against the bookshelf, though. He says that it's not good to have one part of your house for books that people have to get up and go to if they want to read. I have to wonder how this guy became a businessman with that kind of motivation, honest.
Can I just say, he obviously doesn't understand feng shui, right?
Also, maybe if having to go to a room in your house and actually physically pick up a book is an obstacle for you, maybe you're just not that invested in reading a lot of books.
But you could be if you mastered the art of modern feng shui and you realized that there is an ultimate position for a bookcase in your home, in everyone's home. It is the ultimate position for a bookcase, and it guarantees that that somebody will read at some point during the day, right? And it is right outside the bathroom.
Okay.
I didn't realize this.
You ask yourself, how big is his house that it's such an onerous task to make your way from the sofa to wherever the books are? I mean, where's he keeping them? In the West Wing?
I mean, it is Harvard Business Review, so this could be one of those rich people problems.
And it's just like, which house did I leave it in? Ugh, what a nightmare.
Oh, my God, this is only point one. It's not seven more.
Also, full disclosure, I am not a master of feng shui.
Point two, and I can imagine this being prejudged a bit before I explain it, is titled Go Red in Bed.
What?
Steady on there.
I mean, that sounds like you're not going to be getting much reading done at all, to be honest.
And go red in bed is probably not a good complexion for somebody who's about to fall asleep.
Go red in bed, in case you're wondering, listeners, is based on Michael Brewis's book, The Power of When, which I haven't read, but I hate the title. And he says that red light aims melatonin protection so that when you are reading late at night, don't use a bright screen that might disrupt your sleep even after you turn it off. Use a red light.
They do know what a red light means, don't they?
Yeah. Yes, that brings its own dangers. On the other hand, it's a side hustle, so...
Bit of extra cash, so you buy more
books.
From
your own house.
Yeah. He explains this in a way that just makes it sound so rubbish, too. He says, my wife generally falls asleep before I do. Not surprised.
I wonder, does she? Does she really?
And that's when I strap my red reading light on my forehead.
Also, she
what?
Seems
does
to
it
have
literally
a...
say that?
Also, she seems to have a headache a lot. Should I be wrong?
It's just so amazing picturing this guy being, my wife's gone to sleep. Time to look like a rubbish unicorn.
Time to look like a Dalek on downtime.
Time to attract some lonely sailors. The third one, I have to admit, disappointed me. The third one is pretty reasonable. Make your phone less addictive.
Oh, that's actually good advice. That's no fun.
Yeah.
Does that mean I have to stop covering it in heroin now?
Now just give everyone Blackberries.
One of the things that I love about this article is that every point, no matter whether it's a ridiculous one, a good one, an obvious one, a weird one, has to be backed up by him citing one of those books that you get in the Waterstone Smart Thinking section, and it just sounds so rubbish. This one is based on the book Irresistible by Stern School of Business Associate Professor Adam Alter. All of those things sound made up.
Stern? What?
Stern School of Business. Grr.
Well, I hope there's different emotional types of schools of business. Because I just get too many migraines going to Stern.
I for one, am a big fan of the whimsical school of business.
Nice. Much better. That's where Charlie and the Chocolate Factory guy went.
Yeah. The Carefree School of Business still hasn't turned a profit.
Yes. I'm still struggling with my lackadaisical School of Business fellowship. I'll get to it eventually, I guess. 4. This is rubbish. Use the Dewey Decimal System.
I mean...
No!
No.
Why? I mean, the Huey Decimal System was so much better, and Louis Decimal System was, you know, just, it was so far ahead of its time.
Well, Dewey was the 3.0, wasn't it? So, superseded the other two.
Also, what kind of insane, like, three-dimensional grid map do you need to organize all the various piles of books strategically located throughout your house by Dewey Decimal System?
I'm just imagining that it's some kind of weird, complex, you know, they're all in columns since he doesn't believe in bookshelves. They're holding up the roof, and it's some weird, complex version of Jenga whenever he wants to read a book.
I just keep imagining him in a series of book forts scattered around the place.
Oh, so that's what happened to Fort Pedalsmut.
I like how every single tip he gives here too, he just describes it in a way that makes him sound like a man who has only ever read Malcolm Gladwell books, because he is his explanation of why he used the Dewey Decimal System. What's the benefit? You make connections. You see where your big gaps are. I spent one Saturday organizing my books according to the Dewey Decimal System, and in addition to scratching an incredibly deep organizational itch, I now find books faster, feel like my reading is more purposeful, and am more engaged in what I read because I can sort of feel how it snaps into my brain.
Can I ask?
Yeah, this is why his wife goes to sleep before he does.
And also maybe has those extra long tennis coaching sessions.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, some of us in the real world organise our books according to author. So all my Terry Pratchett books are all together.
Or I just, you know, just put them on a shelf. I know where they are.
Yeah, exactly. I can see them. They're on my shelf.
Yeah.
Well, you know, at a push, maybe, possibly alphabetical order by surname.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't learned how to do it properly. That's because I've only just enrolled in the Manana Business School. So,
but once you do, I mean, you'll scratch that incredibly deep organisational itch that I know we've all got.
Oh, that stuff keeps me awake at night, though. Just pacing up and down with me red head torch.
Number 5, right, and this, to me, undercuts the whole idea of the article. Use podcasts and BookTube to solve the next book dilemma. Right, so now he hasn't got enough books to read.
Hang on. What is the next book dilemma?
It is literally what it sounds like. What should I read next?
Ah.
I thought it was actually some really... I thought there was actually a problem.
Yeah, I thought it was there's some sort of a book gap in the market that he's trying to anticipate how to fill it.
No, so he's not even someone like me who wants to read more books because I just impulse buy every time I'm within 500 miles of a second-hand shop.
I suffer from that curse as well, Graham.
Yeah.
This is someone who wants to read more books but is not interested enough in enough things to have more books that he wants to read. What's sadder than that?
Oh, I'm just imagining all his books will be about business, won't they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, especially when you have number 6, which is Unfollow All News. What if this is Bret Easton Ellis?
The picture in my head of this person is just getting sadder and sadder, and I'm just imagining there's a much beloved and much read copy of How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Also, is tip number 8 going to be, instead of spending all day organizing by Dewey Decimal System and trying to make up interests so that you can find more books, maybe just read some books?
Yes.
Yeah, the last person I remember publicly advocating that people shouldn't follow news was Morrissey. That's not really... That's not a path you want to follow in. Number 7 is read on something that doesn't do anything else, which is literally the same point as make your smartphone less addictive.
And read on something that doesn't do anything else. Is this like, you know, reading shampoo bottles or toothpaste tubes? Like
that. No, that's a dual purpose thing. It's reading material, but it also washes your hair.
Yeah,
I'm but just picturing still... now saying, I finally finished another toothpaste tube. I'm reading so much this year.
I still don't know what sodium lauryl sulfate does.
It's the best thing I ever learned from the label on a bathroom product is that the Swedish for shaving foam is barber scum.
Nice.
Oh, what was it? There used to be the 99 pence shop in the Cleveland Center, and Rob and I were in there one time, and there was a box of Weetabix. It was banana Weetabix, but I don't even know which country it was from. But instead of banana, it was called Banan Smack. I liked that so much, I put it on a cap.
Banan Smack.
You know, I think one time Chris Morris asked me if I had any of that.
I think I've played a game of it. It's very aggressive.
And finally, number 8. After which he says, so are you ready to read and raring to go? Are we ever? Number 8 is talk to your local booksellers.
I have. They weren't very interesting. The second-hand booksellers were a lot more interesting, just not very knowledgeable.
I feel like this is good advice for him, but not a great deal for his local booksellers.
I've spoken to some of the staff who work at Waterstones, and well, I found their knowledge a little bit lacking in certain areas.
Yeah, and they also do those things where they put like cards around the shop with books they recommend on, and some of those have made me want to not talk to my local booksellers.
Yeah.
Because it's Russian roulette. I don't know their names. I don't know which one is going to want to talk to me about Atlas Shrugged, so I'm not taking the chance.
At best, you get the one who has this job for too many hours with not enough money because they just need something. And God, I don't know. I read Harry Potter once there. That's my favourite book.
Yeah. I just make sure I go in with a pair of giant headphones on and really advertise the fact that I am not listening to a word you're gonna say to me.
Last time I was in a bookshop, I was in the feminist section, and the book owner came out, or the book worker came over there, came over to me and handed me a Bear Grylls instead. What?
Is that like a George Foreman Grylls?
Oh, my God.
I mean,
how many bookshop widows are actually out there? Clearly, this guy's wife has just tuned out long ago. She's not the only one.
Did he explain why? I'm going to assume it was a he for some crazy reason. Yeah.
Yes.
Did he explain why he thought you might be interested in Bear Grylls' book about, I don't know, the right to grill bears?
I think his selling point was that it had been signed by the author.
Right.
Because that's why I go to a bookshop. I mean, that's the prime reason. What can I get that's been signed by the person who made it? In all shops, that's my rule in general.
Is that how far Bear Grylls' star has fallen? Booksellers are now just shoving copies of his book. Please, just someone take it.
Well, he's
the only reason that I buy the cereals that I do, because Mr. Kellogg himself has signed it.
Yeah. I mean, what was it, Bear Grylls? He's going to be in that Netflix series, A Choose Your Own Bear Grylls Adventure.
Go to a bookshop.
Yeah. But I just want to ask a quick question, very, very quickly, because you mentioned the feminist section. And the feminist section to me in a bookshop is like, I live around the corner from the Women's Centre, and it's always been a chip on my shoulder, because I've always wanted, like, a man's centre where I can go, where they teach me to put up shelves and I can use power tools and stuff like that.
Oh, the men's shed does that?
Yes, they do, but that's only a recent thing. What I want to know is, why isn't there, like, a masculine section in there where it's got, like, loads of, standees of burly guys wearing, like, posing pouches, and it's got a slightly homoerotic vibe? But, you know, it's like the masculine section.
We don't live in a big enough county. You need cities for that sort of thing. There's particular clubs you can go to, don't
you? I was going to say, I've been to bookshops in Brighton a few times and they have something pretty close to what you're asking
for. And I've been to clubs in Manchester sometimes and there's things, you know.
Yeah, I know. I've been to those sorts of clubs as well. Once by accident. all I'm saying is that it would be... I'd love to see that sort of thing in a bookshop just for the irony value.
Section, like how to fix things and how to style your beard and
how to fix things, but have standees around that look like, you know, the village people.
And I'll tell you another bloody thing. When's International Men's Day?
See, I wasn't going to go that far. I just wanted it for the comedy value and the irony.
Oh, unfortunately, the only person who knows when International Men's Day is Richard Herring.
Richard Herring.
He seems very tight-lipped about this.
No, he doesn't spend the whole day talking about it or anything.
Is he still in, like, World War II when loose lips sink ships?
I hope that's inspired everyone to go out.
Well, thank God. I mean, without those rules and suggestions, I don't know how I might have approached a book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I approach it cautiously in case it suddenly attacks.
Yeah, I think the level of caution is necessary.
Is that one of the tips you got from the Bear Grylls book?
No. Yeah. I watched that that hit American TV series, When Books Attack.
All I learnt was to rub two books together. That was it, really.
I'm just disappointed.
Set a fire in a forest.
I'm just disappointed this article never told me what's the right way to hold a book.
gently, with some caresses.
I mean, it doesn't even mention book accessories or anything.
Yeah, the Hadid sisters wouldn't leave you hanging like this.
I know, if they're reading The Outsider or The Stranger or...
Yeah, we haven't done this in too long. We did this late last year and I wanted to make it a regular feature. But everyone, what are you reading at the moment? I mean, nothing, obviously, because you've only just heard this brilliant advice on how to read. But if you were...
If I were to read a book, to use the technical term... Well, you've lent me Sarah Pascoe's book, so I have to read that now.
Ah, yes.
Because I've been looking forward to reading that. But I'm kind of like, I need to prioritise reading more, I think. And also, I don't have a red light in my bedroom, which explains why I'm so poor.
I am currently reading Borderlands by Mike Dash, a dense but incredibly readable book about the history of paranormal phenomena, which stands out as one of the few books about paranormal phenomena that isn't written by a crazo and contains lots of very memorable stuff that was, new to me. And I've been a subscriber to 14 times for over 20 years. It has a German dentist with a haunted toilet.
Nice. What's better than that?
God, this sounds like a book I would enjoy.
Yeah, it sounds like a book I would enjoy. Because I'm on the hippy-dippy side of things, so yeah.
Oh, I'm tempted to bring it in once I've finished. Yeah.
I must finish Sarah Pascoe first, though.
Hmm.
Fair enough. I can't hang on to two of you, like half your library.
I'll give it to Andrew first, so there is at least an equitable distribution of Graham's books.
Thank you.
So, Andrew, Rob, anything? Or?
It
depends. For me, it's kind of complicated because I'm reading like several books at the moment, but I'm also reading a, pardon the phrasing, but a ton, quite literally, of books that are slowly being translated into English. I'm talking about stuff from like Korea and China and Japan.
Rob, I told you, you need to stop reading the works of Christopher Colan.
Yeah, I just pulled up my reading list of all the books that I'm reading that are slowly being translated, and there's 406 of them.
Whoa.
Wow.
Yeah.
You find the time, Robert.
You get like a new chapter has been translated from it like once a day or every couple of days, so it spaces out, so...
What's your secret? Well, I strap a red light to my head and just
it's yeah.
So
anyway, because I did have an answer, but see, here's the thing. So I'm actually reading a book that we're going to be covering on the show. It's one of the ones we got sent in. And it's a horror thriller about kind of psychic tattoos or something. Not to give away too much of how the next show is going to go, but I've maybe forgotten what the title of this book is.
I am reading one particular book.
Black Ink? Dark Ink?
Yeah. I only recently picked this up at a secondhand bookstore. It's Sapiens, A Brief History of Humankind by Yuval Noah Harari.
Right, yeah.
I've heard of it.
It's really good. It's really good. Believe it or not, you remember you got me that Being a Beast?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was looking around at something to read after it, and it was one of the books that was recommended to go alongside it.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Right. So has that about done it for this week?
Yep.
Yeah, my Unterseiter's getting a bit betauben, and the Geist will just get out. So, there's that.
My salad's gone cold.
I forgot to turn a light on.
Same here. I'm sitting in a very small, very
dark. In the dark.
I am. Right. So, final blurb then. If you have enjoyed this episode and you want to listen to others, you'll find them all on Audioboom, Apple Podcasts, or whichever place you get your podcasts from. You'll also find them on our website, along with all the other shows on our network, which is thegeekshow.co.uk. And that's it from us for another couple of weeks. We'll be back in a fortnight or thereabouts, maybe.
Yes, maybe.
Until then, I've been Rob.
I've been Graham.
I've been Andrew.
And I've been Sarah.
And we will see you all later.
Bye. Thanks for listening.